see everyone this morning. We're glad that you are with us. Make sure that's okay. That's good. I bring you greetings from East Alton, Illinois, the brethren that are there. That's a little town just outside of St. Louis, Missouri, just across the state line. And a little group of about 80 to 90 people. And so I had a meeting up there, but it's good to be back. Appreciate very much those who taught the class in my absence, and appreciate all of you. And so many of you asked me about my meetings and asked me how things went, and nobody threw anything at me. So as long as you can say that, then hopefully it's a good meeting. Hopefully it was beneficial to the people. But good to be back with you. I want to begin this morning by reading a few verses from the first chapter of the book of Mark. The text says in verse 29, "And immediately they came, or after they came out of the synagogue, they came into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law was lying sick with a fever, and immediately they spoke to her about Jesus. And he came to her and raised her up, taking her by the hand, and the fever left her, and she waited on them." I hold a few meetings, and like a lot of you, I'm out of town every now and then. And you stay in people's houses very often. And you are very much aware of what's involved with inviting somebody into your home, maybe staying in your guest room for some period of time. I think it's interesting when you read in this particular narrative, and really when you read in numerous places in the gospel, of the fact that Jesus spent time in a lot of people's homes. And when you think about what the Gospels have to say about the mission of Jesus, if you just stop and think about it, there are many occasions where some very interesting things happen when Jesus is visiting in people's homes. And so I thought what I'd do this morning is talk with you about some of these occasions. Jesus, the Son of God, the Messiah, coming and staying with people in their home for some period of time. The first incident that I want to talk with you about is this occasion right here that we've just begun to read from Mark chapter 1. The occasion when Jesus came into the home of Simon Peter and Andrew. And when you look at what the text has to say, let me just go ahead and read the full narrative. It says, immediately after they came out of the synagogue, they came into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now, Simon's mother-in-law was sick, was lying sick with a fever, and immediately they spoke to Jesus about her. And he came to her and raised her up, taking her by the hand, and the fever left her, and she waited on them. When evening came, after the sun had set, they began bringing to him all who were ill, and those who were demon-possessed. And the whole city had gathered at the door. And he healed many who were ill with various diseases. That's a pretty interesting narrative there. That's a pretty interesting visit that Jesus had here in the home of Simon and Andrew. I want to just show you this. This is the ruins of a 4th century AD church building in the city of Capernaum. And that's the city where these events are taking place that we're reading about here in Mark chapter 1. Peter and Andrew and James and John, the sons of Zebedee, they were all fishermen, and they lived in a little fishing village named Capernaum that was located on the northern coast of the Sea of Galilee. And this is the ruins of a 4th century church building that is, according to tradition, built on this site because it's the location, according to tradition, of Peter's house. That's why in the 4th century they built it here. Because tradition said this is the location, or these ruins that were there, those are the ruins of that first century house of Peter and Andrew. And indeed, when archaeologists uncovered the ruins of that 4th century church building. They did get down to this level here that's shown in this photograph. And these are the ruins of a house that clearly dates back to the 1st century. Now, is this in actuality the house of the Apostle Peter? Well, we don't know for certain. It obviously was a 1st century fisherman's house. And in fact, this is an artist's diagram of the ruins, the 1st century ruins of the house there. In other words, this is a diagram of what the 1st century house on that site would have looked like. And it is a typical kind of house from the 1st century. A courtyard area in the center, and then on the perimeter, various rooms that make up then the entire estate or the entire house. And it's also interesting that the archaeologists discovered in this particular spot right here that a wall that originally had stood that would have divided one room from another to give the basic kind of typical size rooms that you would have, that wall had been removed. So that this could create a larger room area, and that would make sense that perhaps this was created into a larger area so that a larger group of people could assemble there. And indeed, according to the tradition, that had been how this place had been used in the 1st century. Toward the end of the 1st century, it, according to tradition, had been used as a church building or as a place for Christians to gather and worship. And so maybe it is true that this was originally the very house of Simon Peter, and maybe it is true that this was used later as a place for those disciples of Jesus the Messiah to then assemble here at Capernaum to then worship God and honor the resurrected Messiah, Jesus Christ. That could very well be the case. We can't be certain about that, but certainly that could be the case. And indeed, these very well may be the ruins of the very place that we're reading about here in Mark chapter 1, where Jesus spent so much time and where Jesus had this very interesting occasion where he healed Peter's mother-in-law and healed various other ones who came to the door and wanted to see Jesus. In fact, this is the threshold of the doorway into that house, into that courtyard area. Whether this is the actual house that the text is talking about, we can't be certain. But I show you this for this reason. We know that the house of Peter that we're reading about here in Mark chapter 1 was a house like this. In fact, this again is a diagram of the kind of houses that were used there by Jews in the 1st century. This actually is a diagram of a 1st century house in Bethsaida, another fishing village on the Sea of Galilee, just a few miles to the east. And again, you see that gateway of that door that would lead into a courtyard area, a large courtyard area, and then on the perimeter, various rooms. This again is another house of Bethsaida. But it gives you an idea of at least the kind of domicile that the text in Mark is talking about. And so maybe we can imagine then better what the text is describing as Jesus then was invited to come into the home of Peter and Andrew. And it was very common in that first century world for there to be several generations that would then live in a house like this. So it makes sense that Peter's mother-in-law would have been right there, and that's where she was lying sick with a fever, and they asked Jesus to heal her, and he did. And so this is what we're reading about here in Mark chapter 1. And we're reading about something that truly was a marvelous event, and it wasn't just an occasion where Jesus healed Peter's mother-in-law, but it was an occasion where the entire city of Capernaum gets word that that's where Jesus is, that's where this prophet is, this healer, and they all are coming there to the doorway and are all wanting to see Jesus, and those who were sick were asking to be healed by him. And Jesus healed them. You know, I wonder how many times Peter reflected back on this and thought about the occasion a little bit before this incident when Jesus had been coming by to where he and his brother were fishing. And Jesus had said to them, I want you to put your nets aside and you come and follow me and be my disciples and I'm going to make you fishers of men. I wonder how many times Peter reflected back on that incident and was reminded of what a good decision he made by saying yes. By dropping those nets and going and being with Jesus and being his disciple along with his two fishing partners, James and John, the sons of Zebedee. I wonder how many times he reflected back on that and thought what a good decision we made when we agreed to be Jesus' disciples and to travel with him. And in fact, as it turned out, Capernaum became the sort of base of operations for Jesus' entire ministry throughout Galilee. And it was that fact of Jesus coming to Capernaum and using that as his base of operations, that's what caused Jesus to be here on this occasion, to have Peter invite him into his home, and that's where Peter's mother-in-law was, and that's what enabled Jesus to then heal her of her illness and all the other people who were sick there in Capernaum. That was a pretty good invitation that Peter offered for Jesus to come stay with him. It worked out pretty well, didn't it? And in fact, when we think about the lessons that we can learn from Jesus coming and staying with people in their home, the first lesson that this narrative illustrates for us is the fact that when Jesus abides in someone's home, his presence always provides a blessing. Always does. And you see that throughout the occasions where the Gospels talk about Jesus staying in someone's home. It always provided some benefit for the people who were living there in that home. You know, I have stayed in the homes of a lot of people. And I try to be a good house guest. I'm always hoping that when I leave a house, that people's attitude is not going to be, I am so glad he is gone. I always kind of worry about that. You know, what are the people that, you know, was I there too long? Did it just get... Because we all know how that is sometimes where you have a house guest and, you know, you're just kind of glad when the time is over and the person can just go ahead and leave. And things can get back to normal. So I always kind of wonder about that and I try to be a good house guest and all that and be neat, you know, and all that stuff. A little hard for me. As my wife can attest, but I try to be neat and tidy and all that kind of thing, hoping that when I leave, people will think, well, you know, at least it wasn't a terrible thing that he stayed with us. But you know, when Jesus left Peter's house on that occasion, nobody was thinking, boy, that was a terrible thing. No, just the opposite. Everybody was thinking, how great that he was here. What a great thing that Peter invited him here. What a great thing that he came and stayed with us. How wonderful for everybody who was here in any way associated with this household. What a wonderful blessing it is when Jesus is there. And folks, that's the way it is in our lives. If we will allow Jesus to come into our home and to have a permanent place in our home, we're going to be blessed because of that. You see that kind of blessing illustrated even further in the next house that I want to talk about Jesus visiting. The home of Jairus and his daughter who had a real problem. In Matthew chapter 9, we read about this beginning in verse 18. The text says, a synagogue official came and bowed down before him and said, my daughter has just died. But come and lay your hand on her, and she will live. Jesus got up and began to follow him. Verse 23 then says, when Jesus came into the official's house and saw the flute players and the crowd in noisy disorder, he said, leave, for the girl has not died, but is asleep. And they began laughing at him. But when the crowd had been sent out, he entered and took her by the hand, and the girl got up. Now talk about a blessing when somebody invites Jesus into their home. Boy, here's a real good one. Because here's a case of where this man's daughter was so ill that she actually had died. And this man, don't you think that father had wanted to do, would have been willing to do anything he possibly could do to save that girl's life? But he couldn't. And death is something that she finally succumbed to. But you know, Jesus not only provides a blessing when he comes into somebody's home, what we also see from this is that Jesus helps us with our children. He sure helped Jairus with his child. Here's a man whose child died, and if he did have the power, Jairus would have used his power to raise that girl from the dead. But he couldn't raise her from the dead. But Jesus could. And you know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of the fact that we need Jesus in our homes to help us raising our children in a different sense. Raising our children in the sense of raising them up to maturity in life. Because folks, no matter how much you think you have the ability, just with your own wisdom and your own intelligence, to raise your children up so they can be the kind of person that they need to be, you really don't have the ability to do that, but the Lord does, and He's there to help you. And the Lord is able to help us rear our children, and we need to have houses where the Lord is absolutely a welcome guest. In fact, He's always there in our home. And that needs to be the kind of home in which we're seeking to raise our children. How many homes in our country today are broken because of divorce? Divorces that would not have happened had Jesus simply been a guest in that home. How many times would husbands and wives have refrained from arguing and saying all those horrible, horrible, cutting words, insulting words that just purposely are designed to hurt? How many times would that not have been the case if Jesus were just right there in that home looking on? You ever notice how when you have company, you tend to be on your best behavior? Yeah. Even me, when I have company, I tend to act pretty good because company's there. But so often what happens is that Jesus is not in our homes. He's not a guest in our homes. And so husbands and wives will fight and hurt each other. And it goes on and on and on, year after year after year. And finally that home is broken. And that's the kind of home that that child is now growing up in. Jesus helps us with our children by, first of all, giving us the kind of home that we should have. The kind of home where children can grow up and see that mom and dad love the Lord first and therefore love each other second. Because Jesus is always there in the home. If Jesus is living in someone's home, you think that might help prevent some of the teenage pregnancies that occur? And don't misunderstand what I'm saying. It's not the pregnancy that is the problem. It's the sexual immorality that produces that outside of wedlock. That's the problem. And despite what society so often still tends to indicate, it's not simply a problem that a girl has. It's the problem of the boy and the girl who commit sexual sin. Jesus isn't there. He's not living in their home. But if Jesus really is in our home, and if Jesus and His teaching is constantly there in our household, do you think that might curb just a little bit some of the premarital sex that goes on in our world with all of then the attending problems. If Jesus is living in our homes, you think maybe it might cause children to grow up with a greater respect for God and not take the Lord's name in vain? You know how children learn to take the Lord's name in vain? They hear their parents doing it. Do you know where children learn to cuss? From other children who learn how to do that because they hear their parents. If Jesus is living in our home, then we are going to have a home where when people get upset and anger begins to fill people's heart, they are going to remember that Jesus is right here looking at us. And so it's not an occasion for us to just fly off the handle and say all sorts of things. And children and parents are not going to have that kind of constant headbutting and constant angry, vile, disrespectful speech, sometimes coming from both sides, if Jesus is really there. If Jesus is constantly allowed to be there in the home, you're not going to have that. This is a day when we celebrate fatherhood. I think that's a good thing. I think of what the Apostle Paul had to say in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4 when he said this to fathers. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That's our responsibility as fathers. To bring up our children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. And ultimately what that necessitates is that our Lord is always there in our home. And we as fathers have established a home wherein the Lord is always a part of our family. He's always there. And that's our responsibility as fathers. That's our responsibility as mothers. To have that kind of a home life. And notice that what Paul says here to fathers, and you can extend this to mothers, he says, don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. That's the balance. And if Jesus is really there in your home, then you're going to be able to have that proper balance. A balance of discipline and instruction, and yet not the kind of parenting that just needlessly provokes children to anger. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21, there Paul worded it this way. He said, fathers, don't exasperate your children, that they might not lose heart. And so often parents make the mistake of thinking, well, I'm being a good authoritative parent, and so if my child gets angry, well then, I can't help that. Sometimes that's true, but not all the time. Sometimes we provoke our children in a needless way. Sometimes we exasperate our children and they lose heart. We've lost the balance. And Jesus is the perfect illustration of the proper balance. When you think of Jesus and how he related to his disciples, did Jesus ever allow his disciples to pull a fast one on him and engage in things that were wrong, and Jesus never realized it and Jesus never did anything about it? No. Jesus never allowed his disciples to get away with anything. But Jesus nevertheless disciplined his own disciples with a love and a firmness that was perfectly balanced, to where they never gave up hope. They never gave up their understanding that he loved them, that he cared for them, and they always were motivated to do better and to please him. That's this perfect balance of not provoking someone to anger, but bringing them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Jesus illustrates the perfect balance in all that. And if Jesus is in your home and in my home, then we're going to, as parents, be in a better position to implement that kind of balance also. Jesus will help us raise our children if we let him be a resident in our house. You know, when we look at this story of Jairus' daughter, of course, made a little play on the word raise there. Jesus actually raised Jairus' daughter from the dead. But do you realize that if Jesus is in your home and my home, and if we allow him to help us raise our children in the sense of rearing our children, do you realize that one day the exact same thing that happened with Jairus' daughter will happen with your children? Because one day, as Jesus teaches in John chapter 5, one day he, the Son of Man, is going to call upon all of his faithful children to come forth from their tombs, and he will take them by the hand and bring them back to life, just like he did with Jairus' daughter. Don't you want Jesus to do that one day for your children? Look at those children that you have brought into the world. They suffer from a disease every bit as terminal as the disease that took the life of Jairus' daughter. It's a disease called mortality. And it's brought on by sinfulness. And all of us have it, and for all of us it's terminal, and none of us on our own can do anything to overcome the death that results from our mortality. But Jesus is there to help us. Jesus is there to raise our children, and one day he will raise our children if we have allowed Jesus to come into our home and we've raised our children with Jesus' help to be godly people, to be godly men and women who respect and honor God and are therefore children of God. One day Jesus will call upon them to come forth from the grave and come back to life and enter into that heavenly reward. That's a powerful thing. But it all starts with allowing Jesus to be the honored resident in your household. Jesus in the home of Mary and Martha. One final case I'd like to look at for just a moment. It's an interesting story here in Luke chapter 10, beginning with verse 38. The text says, "Now as they were traveling, a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister called Mary who was seated at the Lord's feet, listening to his word. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me.' But the Lord answered and said to her, 'Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part which shall not be taken away from her.'" Can't you relate to Martha here? I can. Because my wife has trained me well. When you have people into your home, you better clean up. You better prepare everything. We're having people into our home this afternoon. We've got to make all these preparations. She's been working a long time for that. Has me doing a whole bunch of stuff, making preparation for all that. I understand absolutely where Martha's coming from. And it's not like Martha is some godless woman. She's not some bad person at all. And in fact, what she really is concerned about is that she's doing all this work to honor Jesus because he's an important guest in their home. And here Mary is not doing anything to help in all these preparations to honor Jesus. And that upsets Martha. I can relate to that. But Jesus says, "Martha, Mary really sees something on this occasion that you're not seeing. There really are a lot of things in life that people get all worried about and bothered about, and in their own particular context, there's an understandable reason for it. But Jesus says, Martha, when you back up and look at everything, there's only one thing that really is necessary. It's serving the Lord and learning what the Lord wants you to do so you can make your life what it needs to be spiritually. That's what really is important. In fact, that's what really God wants as the ultimate way to honor Him. So here was an occasion where Jesus was in their home, and Mary saw that as an occasion for me to receive instruction to better myself spiritually. And Martha was concerned about things of a temporary nature, of a material and temporal nature that in the long run were not going to matter at all. Jesus in our home. You know what else Jesus does when He's in our home? He shows us what's really important. He shows us those things in life that really are of eternal significance, and those things that are just temporary and really don't matter. There are so many people in the world today, folks, where Jesus does not reside. And those people put all their emphasis upon money, upon making money, upon a second car, upon a third car, upon a big screen television. All these material things. All these things that are not really important. People put all their attention upon their pleasures and their recreation and all sorts of other things that they're trying to accomplish, and not upon those things that really are important and of everlasting value. When Jesus is allowed to be in our home, He doesn't let us get away with that, because that is a misconception to our own detriment. You know what impresses me about what Jesus said on this occasion to Martha? Sometimes when you're in somebody's home, you're so appreciative of the invitation, the last thing you'd want to do is insult your host, or in this case, hostess. Last thing you want to do. Be nice to your host or hostess, right? But again, Jesus understood there's something more important here. And sometimes the correction that Jesus gives us when we allow Him to reside in our home, sometimes it's correction that we really don't want to hear, that's not pleasant, but we need it. And actually, the greatest blessing that Jesus afforded Martha on that occasion was to correct her misplaced sense of priority and get her to put things back in a proper order of importance. And that's what Jesus does for you when you let Him in your home and you welcome Him there. And He's the honored guest all the time. His presence always provides a blessing. He's going to help us rear our children and have that kind of godly home. And He's going to show us what's really important in life. So the real question is Jesus in your home? Is He in your home? Do you allow Him to come in? He's knocking on the door. Do you let Him in? He wants to reside with you. And I hope that these things will be things that you'll think about this morning, that we might be people that allow Jesus to be that wonderful, honored guest. If you're here this morning and you're not a Christian, we want to encourage you to become one. Allow Jesus into your home, into your heart. And if you've not been baptized into Jesus Christ, we want to encourage you to do that and turn your life around and become His follower. If you are someone who has named the name of Jesus and yet you know and He knows it's been a sham, it's been false, you've reneged on your oath of loyalty, then now's the time to correct that. Now's the time to allow Jesus back into your life and back into your heart. Won't you come together, we stand and sing?